Okay. We've got three great speakers this morning, and I'm going to go right ahead and go to Fred. My name is Diana, and I'm an alcoholic. I have been sober since September 10th, 2000, by the grace of a loving God, good sponsorship, and the 12 steps. I'd like to ask for a moment of silence and gratitude for the AA recoveries of the past 75 years. Okay. We've got three great speakers this morning, and I'm going to go right ahead and go to Fred.
Good afternoon, everybody. My name is Fred, and I'm a grateful recovering alcoholic. My sobriety date is October 20th, 1983. And I just wanted to pass a note on it. I am not feeling very well today, and I've asked the panel here, maybe after I share, I might have to leave here. I'm just not feeling very good, and but if you just bear with me, but I just wanted to be here. So thank you very much. We're going to talk today about our primary purpose and the long form of tradition five states that each Alcoholics Anonymous group ought to be a spiritual entity having but one primary purpose, that of carrying its message to the alcoholic who still suffers. Now, that's the long form. And, you know, the AA group remains the strongest link in our program. The message, in fact, the message on the cover of the AA group pamphlet reads, "Where the AA group, where it all begins." And in 1948, Bill wrote, "Because it has now become plain enough that only a recovered alcoholic can do so much for a sick alcoholic, a tremendous responsibility has descended upon all of us. Recovery is a matter of life and death, so Alcoholics Anonymous cannot ever be diverted from its primary purpose of carrying the message to the alcoholic that still suffers." And one further note, on page 561 in the big book, it states, "Therefore, no society of men and women ever had a more urgent need for continuous effectiveness and permanent unity. We alcoholics see that we must work together and hang together, or else most of us will finally die alone." You know, in the fall of 1983, I reached out to Alcoholics Anonymous. I was 40 years old at the time, and I had reached the bottom that many of us feared. And, you know, I didn't see it coming either. I feared being homeless. I'm originally from New York City. I grew up seeing people, homeless people, and people that were having difficulty in their life, but I never paid attention to it. I never thought that I would be there until finally I didn't see that I was fast-tracking myself to that point. So shortly after calling, I reached my bottom, I called the AA hotline in the little town I lived in Central Florida. And several hours later, a gentleman came by to see me, and I had just been informed a few hours before that from my wife and my family that they didn't need me anymore. I was a burden to them, and they'd asked me to go. My wife stood there that morning with a child on each side of her, and those children, I could see the fear in their eyes that their dad, was going to be gone. My daughter, 9 years old, and my son, 15. You know, we'd had a very close family, even through all the years of drinking and abuse and abusive with my drinking and so forth. And when I say abuse, there was no abuse in my family life. It was just abuse that I was doing on myself. Verbal abuse is also a very serious thing. But anyway, the only option I was given that morning was that I had to leave. And I started having this discussion. You can imagine my discussion with the gentleman that 12-stepped me that morning when Don came there. The only thing I wanted to discuss with him is how I was going to get out of this latest fiasco that I had been in. And didn't AA have people that could come and talk to my wife and tell her what a good person I really was? You know, it didn't matter that I had not worked in 2 years. and that I couldn't get a job. I mean, I had a very good profession. I worked, had a wonderful job, but you know, they couldn't depend upon me being somewhere. If they told me to be in San Francisco at 9 o'clock on Monday morning, I meant it the previous week. But the problem was, I might never get out of the airport in Chicago. Okay, I might wind up staying there and never make it to my meeting the following Monday morning. So basically what Don did, I'm going to tell you, not getting away from our topic here, is that Don explained to me, after he listened to me and told me about the things that AA did not do, he started talking about their primary purpose, and that was to carry the message of recovery to the still-suffering alcoholic. And that morning, Don sat with me in my house there, all alone, just the two of us, and he told me, he said, Fred, he said, I can't tell you that things are going to change, but I can tell you that if you are willing to not drink just for the rest of the day, he just asked me. He didn't say I had to quit drinking for the rest of my life. I didn't want to hear that morning, okay? But he did say, could I not drink for the rest of that day and then attend a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous with him that night? And I did go, and I did attend a meeting that night, and I picked up a white chip. And thank God it was the only white chip I ever had to pick up. But, you know, it was a... Something happened that evening, that September evening. I was introduced to a God of my understanding, and I was given the gift of sobriety. Had it not been for another alcoholic that day, had it not been for Don, and I know God put him in my life that day, had it not been for Don coming and carrying that message of recovery to me, I don't know that I ever would have made it to these rooms. Because at the time, my mind was just filled with, what do I need to take care of Fred's immediate problems? And when I got to that meeting that night, and that group, and the people that were there, you know, it was just a small group on a Friday night in Lakeland, Florida, okay? But there were a few people in the room that I knew. It wasn't that big of a town back then. By the end of the night, I felt I knew everyone in that room. And, you know, somebody asked me a long time ago, they said, what are the two things you can remember about your first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous? And besides coming into that room that night and looking in the back of the room and seeing coffee and cookies, was when they held up that white chip at the end of that night. After listening to the folks share and carrying the message, keeping with our primary purpose, our singleness of purpose, and telling me that I could have a better life if I just would choose not to drink one day at a time. And I remember the end of that evening when they were holding up those chips. And they said, is there anyone in this room that has a desire to stop drinking? And as I said a few moments ago, I heard that message of that primary purpose, carrying the message to the alcoholic who still suffers. I can't tell you what anybody said that night. I'm not really sure if I remember. But I do know that in the days and the... after that, and I remember that rest of that weekend, I kept talking with Don and a couple other fellows, and I kept bringing up about the issues, all these things that are bothering me, the things that I need to take care of in my life there, and all the things that were wrong, and what's going to happen to me, and they kept going back to this primary purpose, and they would, I would get out of the car, and they'd close the door, and they'd say, don't drink, and they'd leave. I have no doubt that night that the strength of that group was the difference to maintaining my early sobriety. You know, I didn't have a job, so I didn't have any place else to go. They would come get me every morning, you know, and soon, you know, within a very short time, they had me going on 12-step calls with them and letting me share my little bit of time that I had and sharing about our primary purpose, and that is of carrying the message the alcoholic still suffers. And, you know, like I say, by the grace of God, I did not drink that day and haven't had a drink since. And, you know, and also it talks about, in the 12 and 12, it talks about when Bill went to Towns Hospital after he had sobered up, and he asked Dr. Silkworth if he had a prospect that Bill could speak with. And he put him with a patient who immediately told Bill that, you know, his life would be a lot better off and he could handle his alcoholism, his alcohol, if his business partner, his wife, would just treat him better. You know? And that was my thing, too, when I was out there drinking. You know, it was always easier to point at you, point at the family members and say, you know, if you didn't do this, I wouldn't do that. It wasn't until I got to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous And I heard our primary purpose. And we talk in that fifth tradition, it talks about carrying the message to that alcoholic who still suffers. You know, Lord knows this weekend how many people that may be coming here that are here for the first time and coming to a first meeting like this. I mean, there were less people in this first row here at my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous than there are here, you know, today. And look at what we have here today. So, but you know, Bill shared his story that with that man that day. And, you know, as he was going along, Bill started talking about the spiritual part of it and the strength of the home group. And this prospect interrupted Bill and said, "How much does your scheme cost? And what are you getting out of it?" Well, I can tell you for this alcoholic, what I get out of it is the fact to know that I have another day of sobriety and the opportunity to share with another alcoholic. You know, God puts all these miracles in our life. And one of the things about carrying the message, I think this is sort of directly related to it. I remember after about 3 weeks of going to that meeting, there was an open meeting on Friday night. That was the first meeting I went to. And I really loved that meeting. I really enjoyed the people there. And I was just having a great time going to that meeting. But, you know, things weren't too good at home yet. And I had been talking to my wife, trying to ask her if she would go to that meeting with me. You know, I wanted to just bring her with me, you know, so she could see what Fred's doing, you know. And anyway, I finally did convince her to go to that meeting. And we got to the door that night, and standing at the door to greet her was someone, again, carrying the message to the alcoholist who still suffers, was Wilbur, my Allstate insurance agent. And Wilbur said, "Welcome, Fred. We're glad you finally got here." I didn't know. I hadn't seen him before. And my wife was with me, and he said, "Sandy, you go in that room over there. Fred, you go in here with us." And 27 years later, we're still going to separate rooms. And that's the gift. That's what I'm talking about, carrying the message that the alcoholic who still suffers. Because, you see, that night I had a motive by taking Sandy with me. I figured, look what they've done for me in the last 3 weeks. Just imagine what they could do for her. Well, I got away from that primary purpose right there in the beginning. But, you know, Bill's answer was, you know, to this newcomer, what he was getting out of it, is my own sobriety and a happy life. You know, Bill also mentioned the spiritual program, and he talked about the humility part of it, too. And, you know, and we're not here to change anybody's views or religious views or things like that. And every newcomer has to remember that the business of staying sober must be their top priority. And if we fail at that, you know, we can't succeed at anything else. And speaking just a little bit about groups and the primary purpose, you know, it speaks in our literature, it speaks about groups that in trying to remember their primary purpose, they start having meetings or set up a meeting in, say, for instance, a treatment or a rehab center. And many times, this is a regular meeting that goes on there all the time. And too often, these meetings are finally interpreted as part of the facility. And that's where we have to be careful. We want to make sure that, you know, we're still, as groups, we take these service assignments and we go in there. And sometimes that's a lot better because you start taking the seven tradition collections. Next thing you know, staff members are putting it in or family members that be there are contributing to it. And we just don't want to do that. So, but... And then, of course, you know, in also trying to stay with our primary purpose is we want to make sure that as an alcoholic group or in trying to carry this message, we don't start an expanded AA program. Like I said earlier, you know, we're not an employment agency. Obviously a lot of people, and certainly my career and things like that, by coming to meetings. Eventually it helps one thing after another, and I was able to get back doing what I wanted to be doing. But, you know, we have to remember, let's keep with our primary purpose, and that is carrying the message to the alcoholic who still suffers. And I know that night, I just, after these years, I'll never forget the times and all those times when I just remember that night and the fact that those people, that God put a person in my life to just stay with that primary purpose, and that was carrying the message to the alcoholic who still suffers. Thank you very much for being here this weekend.
Okay, that was a great job, Fred. I'd hate to see you on a good day. If that was an off day, you did a really nice job. And one thing I've learned here in AA is that, you know, we suit up and show up even when we don't feel well. And you really did a nice job, and I want to thank you. I'd like to introduce our next speaker. I didn't bring my paper. It's in the bag over there, and it's not up here. Dave, from California. That I remember. I've been studying it all morning.
Hi, my name is David, and I am an alcoholic. And I am from California. Not always. I was born and raised in Detroit, Michigan. And anyway, my sobriety date is February 25th, 1977, and I didn't have anything to do with that at that time. And my home group is Monday Night Men's Stag in Laguna Beach, and some of them are sitting right here in front. You know, I know the topic is our primary purpose, and I think Fred did a fabulous job in covering it. Prior to my coming to Alcoholics Anonymous, I had a much different primary purpose. My primary purpose before I came to AA was taking care of myself, doing whatever it took to make me feel good, to make me look good. And instead of helping others, I used as many people as I possibly could to further what I wanted to get out of life to make me feel good, and how things have changed over the years. You know, I come from a, I didn't have a happy childhood, and matter of fact, it was very bad, full of abuse, neglect, and matter of fact, some of the things that I suffered had my stepfather, had people known about it, my stepfather would have been put in jail. And so that, though, had nothing to do with my becoming an alcoholic. I became an alcoholic because of one reason only. I drank too much and I got crossed over that invisible line. And it did certainly have a lot to do with the way I felt about myself, not as good as, and I knew that you would find out eventually. You know, I continued, I was a weird kid. I just, by the time I was 10 years old, I had committed burglary, arson, shoplifting, and I can't remember them all, and I was made a ward of the state, and declared, and I'll never forget it because I had an experience with a grandson just recently, not too long ago, standing before the juvenile judge, being declared incorrigible, and taken from my home, thank God, and put into an institution. It was an orphanage where I, you know, spent the next 6 years still doing some of the things I did when I was in the orphanage. I did steal the church's choir money. Got arrested again for shoplifting. I wound up having this life of just doing whatever it is I wanted to do. But when the punishment kept getting more severe, I began to develop the Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde personality. When the punishment got severe, I'd do a turnaround and become a model citizen. I dropped out of high school and went into the service and continued my behavior in the service. I got arrested for drunken disorderly several times in the service. I had two court martials, the last one being the most serious. I was out in town. We were in Fort Hood, Texas. I swore I'd never come back to Texas again after 2 years in Fort Hood. Matter of fact, I swore that I wouldn't even fly over the state again. And as God would have it, in 1983, he had me open a restaurant for our company in Dallas, Texas, and I had to go there once a month for 25 years. And you guys have great, great AA. Thank God I was sober at the time I started coming. But And anyway, just the last thing about to give you an idea of what kind of personality I had. A buddy of mine, we were out in Temple, Texas, doing what we usually did. Matter of fact, when I joined the service, I thought I'd died and gone to heaven, because mostly all you did in the service was work 8 hours, and then you went out at night and got drunk and hunt for women. But if you'd be alcoholic like me, after a while you just forgot about hunting women, and you drank. But on the way back, we had borrowed our buddy's car, another buddy's car, and we were coming back into Fort Hood, and we're out of cigarettes, and the gas station is only about 3 blocks away from the main gate, but it was closed. So my bright alcoholic thinking says, well, I'll just break in the back door, break in the cigarette machine, and get some cigarettes. And while we were there, there's a bunch of new tires around, and so I figured, you know, we could use a few of those, and threw those in the back seat of the car, and then came back to the base. And the next morning, I realized that I had these new tires underneath the barracks, and what was I going to do with them? Again, keen alcoholic thinking, I put a notice on the board that I had 4 tires for sale. And about 2 o'clock that afternoon, you know, PFC Stockman, you're wanted in the wardroom, and they're waiting for the Texas State Police and the MPs to arrest me. And I wound up spending 90 days in the city jail, getting sentenced to 2 years in the state penitentiary, which, thank God, I didn't have to serve. The Army took me back, and instead they put me in the stockade for 6 months, and I walked around for 6 months with fatigues and a big white P on my back, with somebody behind me with a shotgun, picking up cigarette butts on Fort Hood. But anyway, that was pretty much my alcoholic adventures. I knew one thing out of all of that, and that is that I didn't want to spend any more time behind bars. So I began to turn a new leaf. But my disease stayed with me, and I went to college, flunked out of a scholarship at college, had to go to another one, met my wife in college, got married, and we proceeded for the 16 years of our marriage, dealing with my disease of alcoholism and my primary purpose of taking care of me, not taking care of the family, satisfying my needs and nobody else's. On February 25th, 1977, you need to know I used to get my 6:30s mixed up. Usually 6:30 on Friday evenings we had dinner at home. But if I were to take a drink sometime during that day, I couldn't predict. I'd gotten to the point where I could no longer predict my behavior, and I might show up at 6:30 on time, you know, lucid, or I might show up at 6:30 Saturday morning or 6:30 Monday morning. I never knew. Or you might get a phone call from me to come bail me out of jail because I was arrested for a DUI. But this February 25th, I got my 6:30s mixed up again, and I came home at 6:30 Saturday morning. And my 11-year-old daughter and my 13-year-old daughter were standing next to my wife at the front door. And everybody had that look on their face, and I had that feeling of guilt come over me. I come to learn later on in Alcoholics Anonymous, the reason I felt guilty is because I was. And I remember just going past my wife into the bedroom and started to steel myself for the lecture that was going to happen. And she walked into the bedroom and looked at me, and all of a sudden I broke down crying. And I looked at Karen and I said, "Karen, I think I have a problem with alcohol. Can you help me?" I am so grateful to this day that Karen didn't roll around on the floor laughing, because she had been calling me that dirty name for a long time, alcoholic, and she knew I had a problem. And she said, "David, the only thing I can think of that we can do is to go to AA." And there was silence. And I said, "Do we really have to do that?" I had been to AA meetings, and I didn't know about your primary purpose, and that was to help me. And I liked the people in AA. Matter of fact, a banker took me to my first meeting. This was prior to my 6:30 waking up, and I liked him. His name was Brown, and I liked him, and I thought if I ever got like him, had a story like his, you know, I might try AA. But anyway, I was so sick and shaking that day that we couldn't go to a meeting that night, and so on Sunday, we went to our first meeting together in South Pasadena, and we were both scared to death. And we walked up to this meeting in the Episcopal Church in South Pass and walked into this room. And there might have been 50, 60 people there at round tables. And this older gentleman, who I've become now, stood up and walked over to us and stuck out his hand and says, "Hi, my name is Harold P. Why don't you come and sit down with us at this table?" You know, Karen and I sat down. And we went through the meeting. I have no idea what was said, but I will never forget that feeling that came over me, that sense of relief when that gentleman walked up and stuck his hand out and welcomed me and made a space for us. And, you know, I haven't found it necessary to take a drink since that meeting. And, you know, my primary purpose today is like all of us. It is to stay sober and to help others. And maybe I can talk a little bit about how I do that. And, you know, people from time to time have asked me, with all your sobriety, why do you keep going to meetings? And, you know, I keep going to meetings so that I can stay sober and to make myself available to that other alcoholic out there that might need some help. You know, I got a sponsor right off. He was a Mexican doctor, Dr. Leo. And the reason I got him as a sponsor, I heard him speaking at a meeting, and somebody let me know when it's time. I met him at a meeting, speaker's meeting, and he was relating a story that he told that occurred to him in a restaurant in Los Angeles. And as it turns out, it was one of the restaurants that I was responsible for operating. And there were a couple of attorneys and you know, high-powered guys around the table, and they were all bragging about what they did. And they turned to Leo, and they said, "Leo, what do you do?" He says, "Well, I'm a doctor." He says, "Well, what do you do?" He says, "I'm a surgeon." And he says, and what do you do as a surgeon?" And he says, "I do head transplants." And, and as it turns out, Dr. Leo headed up an alcoholic program in one of the hospitals in L.A., and he literally did head transplants. Maybe mind transplants or turnarounds. So my first 10 years was with Dr. Leo, and he brought me through some of the most difficult times. You know, when I got to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, I thought I was at the top of my game. But I really was a liar, a thief, and a cheat. I had a wife at that time that really needed divorcing, and the only reason we hadn't been divorced at that time is back in those days, we couldn't figure out how to do it. I had a job at that time that I was grossly underpaid. I didn't have the position in that company that I deserved and should have had, And I didn't have the respect of the coworkers and the people in that company that I should. I had two daughters at that time, 11 and 13 years of age, and I loved them to the best of my ability. But all I could think about was those two girls were going to, I was going to have to send them to college. I'd have to get them a car. I would only think of them in terms, and that's how I thought in those days. I could only think of people in terms of how it affected me. And how things have changed thanks to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. How I'm able, through participating in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous and learning those 12 steps and learning how to apply them in my daily life, how much it helps me to get outside of myself and be able to see really God's hands on all of you, and makes me such a better person, a better father, a better husband, a better coworker. You know, I'm not any of those things that I was 33 years ago when I got here. You know, today I am a really good dad, and I am just celebrated my 75th birthday, and my company doesn't want me to retire. I still work. I have an opportunity. I travel around the world. I go to regular meetings in six countries in Asia. I have four regular meetings that I attend. I have a sponsor. I am a sponsor. I pray. I can't express to you enough my gratitude in the joy of being a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous that brings me here. You know, I told you that when I got here, I had this wife that needed divorcing, and I had these two kids, and I had this job. Well, today, I certainly have those same two daughters. They're 48 and 46 now. And they've given me seven grandchildren who have never seen me take a drink. I have the most wonderful... I have the most wonderful gift in my life, and that's my wife, Karen, who I love dearly. I never knew that a relationship could occur between a man and a woman such as has occurred to us. Our gratitude towards each other is that we are so grateful for our everyday life together. And that job, I've got a fabulous job. I happen to know that there's no one in the room who works in my company, so I can tell you that I'm grossly overpaid. I have a position in the company that I never dreamed was possible. I have the respect and love of my coworkers. I can't tell you over the years how many of them I've been able to talk to and help on the road to sobriety. Back in the old days, I was the HR department as head of operations, and if anybody had a drinking problem, they sent them to me, and it was really easy. There weren't any laws. We had labor laws we had to obey in those days. I gave them, you know, one option. You know, it was 90 meetings in 90 days or you're fired. And I can't tell you how well that worked. Anyway, today I have that same wife that I had. We just celebrated 49 years of marriage. I have the same job. I've been with him for 36 years now. And, of course, I have the two same lovely daughters with seven grandchildren. And I am so grateful to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous and for the opportunity that I still have to help others and to carry the message. Thank you.
I'd like to introduce Pat.
Hi, I'm Pat B., and I'm an alcoholic. What a good-looking group. Amazing. My sobriety date is January 17, 1987, and my home group is the step-by-step group in Bon Terre, Missouri, and, of course, for me, it's the best group in all of AA. And, you know, 19 years ago, May of 1991, I think it was, that it was started, and it's called a step-by-step group, but we're not a step group. But it's amazing, every meeting we talk about either steps or traditions or recovery, because we always open our meeting with the format of some type of conference-approved literature, whether it's a pamphlet or a book. So, but the step-by-step, people expect a step meeting, and sometimes they get it, sometimes they don't. Also, I not only give credit to my higher power that I found in Alcoholics Anonymous that I didn't want anything to do with when I got here, and strong sponsorship. I have always had sponsors in my life that were in the primary purpose. You know, when I'd call them and I'd say, you know, the husband, blah, 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 blah. And they'd say, no, let's talk about what are you doing to protect your sobriety today? But, what? Now, wait a minute, you got to hear this. You know, they always redirected me into, just don't pick up the drink. Don't worry about that stuff right now. Just don't pick up the drink and take these things through the steps, you know, when I could. So I credit a lot of that because, David, I think he said, you know, or no, it was Fred, you know, I haven't had to go back out yet. Okay, and I always say that yet. You know, but I really believe it was the type of sponsorship that my higher power put in front of me, and believe me, I'm not easy to handle. You can talk to the sponsor I've got today. And also I like to say this is my understanding only. My understanding today of our primary purpose is totally different than when I was 5 years sober, 10 years sober. I mean, it's totally different. God's always doing something for me. He's always changing something, letting me see something that's new and different. And that helps keep me fresh. Okay, and I'm like, you know, a lot of people say, how come you keep coming back? I said, because I'm not done yet. There's still a lot of stuff, and there's people out here in this room that could verify there's still a lot of stuff wrong with me that I still need to come back, I still need to take care of, you know, to keep us in our primary purpose. One thing that I always like to share when it's this, and I promise it's not going to be a service talk. The three legacies of Alcoholics Anonymous are all about our primary purpose. All about. The steps, when we go through the steps and we're trying to find that relationship with our own higher power, trying to get sober, stay sober, that's the primary purpose of the steps, was so I could find a way where I didn't have to drink and I could find this higher power. The traditions, the primary purpose is so we can get along with each other so we can stay sober and help other alcoholics achieve sobriety. Our preamble says it all the time, you know, to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. I don't have to agree with you, but I have to love you enough to give you the right to your own opinion, even when I know it's wrong. And I've had good groups in my life, my recovery, that have taught me that even when I think I'm the rightest of the right, I better respect that we're all there for one purpose, and that is how's the best way we can carry our message to the next alcoholic. Then we get into the service part of it, and I've got a lot of service background, and you have to almost go through it to understand it, that has got a primary purpose too. The only thing service is all about, the service structure. There's all kinds of service to my group, sponsorship, going and doing different things, coffee, you know, that's service. But the service structure that people don't like to hear about, the concepts, the 12 what's, the primary purpose of that is for us to reach and find other alcoholics, to let them know who we are, and what we're not, so they can come to our rooms, so they can find a way to stay sober. That's what service is all about. When you talk about World Services or the General Service Office or whatever, their total focus is how can we relate to the world and make sure that everybody knows what Alcoholics Anonymous is so they can come. A little bit of my history, because people are sharing history. I started drinking when I was 9. The only reason I drank that Mogan David wine is I didn't want my daddy to drink it and get drunk. And I knew I'd get in trouble if I threw it away. I was 9 years old. I knew that. I knew if I drank it, I wouldn't get in trouble. And I didn't. But I did go into a blackout. And from that point on, I got that feeling that all of a sudden my skin fit feeling when I drank that first glass. But from that point on, my personality totally changed. My primary purpose became, let's have as much fun as we can. You know, that was until I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, that's what it was all about. And you know, to fast forward through all those years, by the time I was 14 years old, I had been taken down to Lynch Street in St. Louis. I'm originally from St. Louis. Three times, that's a police station. This is before I was 14 years old. I had been kicked out of St. Louis public schools permanently. Now, people, in 1966, it was hard to get kicked out of public school permanently, but I chose that. I mean, that happened. And you know something? You know what a 14-year-old girl that hates being with her mother does that gets kicked out of school? They find a 22-year-old teenster and they get married. And that's what we did. October of 66, we got married. From that point on, things happened because I could drink more. I didn't have to find all these other people out here. I had a 22-year-old that really liked me when I was drunk. Until I got drunk too much and too often, and he came home seeing me in the room, passed out drunk. Throughout our marriage, we had abuse, we had physical abuse, we had violence, we had things that were just terrible, that I went through a nervous breakdown. They gave me 18 shock treatments. And you know something? Those doctors loved me very, very well, but they did not know about my alcoholism. They treated me for what I told them. And untreated alcoholism masks all kinds of things. We had two children. By the time I was 35 years old and I was forced into treatment, I didn't agree to go to treatment. I knew I was an alcoholic, but I didn't think Alcoholics Anonymous would work for me or anything else. And you know, when I got in that treatment, I went through the attitude, I'm going to do every effing thing they say, and I'll show them it don't work. That's exactly what I said. You know, because when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, I was not a lady. I didn't dress like a lady. I didn't talk like a lady. You did not want me around you, nor your husband, nor anything else that belonged to you. And, you know, I went through that treatment center, and the first time that I was approached with primary purpose was with this counselor. That the treatment center was only 17 days old. They had no training in Al-Anon. They had nothing. And when he asked me if I had any resentments, I told him, no. I have been hurt in the past a lot, but I worked through all of that with my nervous breakdown. He was so uneducated, and I'm still friends with him today. He said, okay. You know, he didn't try to focus on all of the stuff, because if they would have, I wouldn't have stayed sober. I know I wouldn't have. I know I realized now that primary purpose for this alcoholic was I had to do the first thing first, and that is learn how to not pick up that next drink. Doesn't mean I didn't want to. Oh, man, there were times. It's not been all that long. And I think, man, be sure, be nice not to be an alcoholic. If you want to get to wanting to do anything here, it's really hard to get anything done. And that's something that I finally learned. So primary purpose with my sponsors that I had, and the one that I have, what I call my first really qualified AA sponsor, when I came to her, she said, if you want what I've got, you'll do what I did, and that will be going through the books, and that will be taking the steps, and that will be giving it back to someone else because you've been selfish for all of these years. You need to give to other people without a motive. I didn't understand that. In fact, I had right motive on my hand for a while. But she kept me in primary purpose. She did not try to fix our marriage. She did not try to make me a better mom because I was so full of guilt. She didn't try to make me a better worker. We had financial problems that I had really put us in a bind. She didn't try to do any of that. She gave me techniques, gimmicks to make it easy until I took it all through the steps, until my higher power decided what I needed to do with them. And I am so grateful. I am so grateful. You know, when I walked into Alcoholics Anonymous in my area, in my district, the district had been a dark district since 1974. And I came in 87. which meant there were no AA groups. There were meetings, but no one had more than 30 days. There were no big books. There were no nothing. There were no women. There were just men sitting around talking about their machines. And down there, it was tractors, tillers, you know. But I had made a commitment because I was told in 90 meetings and 90 days that I was going to do everything they told me to do. Show them it wouldn't work. I made a commitment, 90 meetings and 90 days. Well, I got to put up with these fools. But you know something? I started feeling that sense of belonging because they're drinking stuff. Even though they were still drinking, it's like, well, I'm not the only one that does that. That was the primary purpose. That's what my higher power knew that I needed. There were a couple guys there that had some time that really, really protected me. Because you got to remember, I was young. I was not a lady. I didn't dress like a lady. And I had a body that you could show off that was very nice back then. And they protected me from the dangers of myself. Put it that way. And all they did was read out of the big book because they were so tired of trying to carry any other message. They didn't know anything else to do except read out of the big book. Well, that primary purpose. Even though people weren't staying sober there except them, it was still the primary purpose. My recovery was pretty remarkable. I had cancer. I was diagnosed with cancer in the first year. I came in January, and in October, I was diagnosed with cancer, and they told me I was going to live for 6 weeks. Primary purpose helped me walk one day at a time. Just don't pick up the drink. Just don't pick up the drink. Things like, what memory are you going to leave your family? Just don't pick up the drink. Alcoholics Anonymous surrounded me. By then, I had found a sponsor out of my area, female, in St. Louis that had required me, which was fine, to drive to St. Louis 3 to 4 times a week. And they helped me live with cancer until I died. And they kept reminding me, it's all about not drinking, Pat. Leave your family the most wonderful memories you can. You know, I had daughters that respectfully, the big book talks about cordially, hated me. I had a husband that had walked away from me emotionally, even though physically he was there. In a short time, things started changing with that. And it was because I wasn't drinking no matter what. It wasn't long my husband, 22-year job, lost his job. The first thing out of my mouth was, well, at least I'm sober. Primary purpose has always been, and I try to teach that to the girls that I sponsor, that, you know, if you don't stay sober, nothing else has got a chance. Nothing. And these are the ways that I stay sober. One thing I like to share, I've heard it around, and I wasn't going to do it, but I've heard it around this week so much, these last couple of days. My daughters, before recovery, had a cat, and it got hit. And that poor little thing, they brought it in, and its little innards were hanging out, and it was really in bad shape. And because the kids wanted to do something, I called the vet. And the vet said, well, you can't do anything for it. You know, if it's that bad of shape, just give it water every 10 minutes, you know, pet it, let the girls do whatever they need to do. And, you know, I sat there on my couch drinking, watching these children, every half hour or whenever that the cat wanted to get out, and they take the cat lovingly and put it over to where it would try to go to the bathroom, but it couldn't. And then they take it back and put it in the beer flat that we had it in. And then they feed it water. And this went on all night long. And it was about 10 o'clock the next day. I called the vet and I said, I don't know what to do. It's still alive. And he said, you know, only love does that. You know, people, when we walk into Alcoholics Anonymous, our guts are hanging out too. Mine were. You couldn't see it. I hid it. But my guts were hanging out. And it was love of Alcoholics Anonymous that helped me come back to the next meeting, helped me try the next step, help me do whatever, you know, so I just didn't have to drink. And when I just didn't have to drink, my higher power gave me all the other messages that I needed, whether it was through the steps, whether it was at a meeting, or whether it was just in prayer. I like to do this too. I'm not into other practices, but I'd like you to just take a second, just a second, and think about the first time you ever walked into Alcoholics Anonymous meeting. First time. Where was your life at? Where were your relationships at? What was going on in your life when you really came to your first AA meeting? What would we have done if it wasn't here? You know, there's people in this room way before me that Alcoholics Anonymous was here when I entered the rooms, even though it was a meeting and not a group anymore. It was here, you know, because they focused on what's our primary purpose. We've got to stay sober and we've got to help these other alcoholics stay sober so these alcoholics can help other alcoholics stay sober. So these alcoholics and on and on and on and on. That's what we're all about here. You know, before recovery, if you gave me something and I got mine, I was out of there. Okay? You give me mine, I'm fine. You know, I don't need any crap with that other stuff. You know, today I am obligated. It says it in Dr. Bob's story. He did this work out of obligation to the next alcoholic because it was done for him. To bring you into today where I'm at, well, I'm almost going to be a repeat of a couple of people over here, but, you know, that's what Alcoholics Anonymous is all about. That husband that I snatched in 1966, that it got so bad in 7 years that the Pine Lawn Police confiscated our guns. And they were not protecting me. Last October 1st, we celebrated 43 years. He's the most wonderful man in the world. Anybody that knows me knows how I speak of my husband and what a wonderful father he is and has always been. And as long as I work a program, we do pretty well. That's what my sponsor said. The two children that cordially hated me, they want to be a part of my life now. They call me on a regular basis because they know I'm not going to be ragging them out. They know I'm not going to be telling them what to do. They know I'm not even going to tell them what to do if I agree with it. They just know that Mom, they can call Mom. And, you know, the ones they didn't trust me at all, and I was not trustworthy, those children went through terrible times because of my alcoholism. I see the consequences of my disease in them today. Those same children allow us to take our grandchildren 4 and 5 states away, pop up camping. You know, and those children haven't seen us drink either. In fact, every once in a while something comes up about the drinking. And the oldest grandson just says, Mama, I just can't believe you drank. Yeah, now he doesn't know all the war stories. But he knows enough that it's just amazing to him. All that had to do with was primary purpose. Yes, my sponsor and I talked about the other things. Yes, I go to other venues and this and that. But Alcoholics Anonymous, thank you so, so much that you didn't try to fix anything about me except teaching me how not to pick up the first drink so the higher power could do the rest. Thank you.
Thank you, Pat. Again, my name is Diana, and I'm an alcoholic, and all of our speakers have been wonderful today. And I'd just like to share for a moment before we close, you know, what our primary purpose has meant to me. And as our speakers have shared this morning, that when I first came to AA, my primary purpose was quite a bit different than what it is today. And that was basically, to get as messed up and to party as much as I could and to do as much as I could do as fast as I could do it and get as much as I could for myself. And today, by the grace of some really good sponsorship and a lot of service work, my primary purpose today really is to carry the message, and I am fortunate to be sponsored and to be able to sponsor other women. In this past year, I've started a big book meeting at my home where women are coming and we're just reading the big book, and some are showing up every week and, you know, some are coming in and out, but I've really been blessed to be able to do that, and my sponsees just teach me so much, and my sponsor has just helped me so much to change the person that I brought in here. To that, my primary purpose today, when we are at this international convention that I am just amazed and blown away at every corner of how much I can care about and think about others, and that's really all I am about today. Of course, I do still think about myself once in a while, but it's not like it used to be. You know, it is not like it used to be, and I truly find no greater joy than in, you know, showing up at my service position and showing up at my home group and showing up with my sponsees, and I know that the result of all that, you know, changes me, and I really have a life that is second to none today. Because as our speaker shared as well, my life was trash when I got here, and today it is really second to none. I'd like to close today's meeting with the responsibility statement. If anybody would like to join me with that.